Novacastrians, it's Dr. Emma here for another episode of the Jetstream. I'm joined today by just one fellow panelist. Everyone say hello to Andy.
Hello, Andy.
Andy, say hello to everyone.
Oh, hello, everyone.
So awkward. So Andy and I today are going to be reviewing the game that we have just played on the Wednesday just gone against Brisbane Roar at home at McDonald Jones Stadium, which we unfortunately lost 2-1. And we'll be previewing the game against Wellington Phoenix, which will be on Sunday evening down at Wellington's temporary home in Wollongong. Andy, I'm going to start with the opening question, of course, because that's why it's called that. We're recording this, everyone, right after the Joe Biden presidential inauguration in the US. If you don't know what that is, you're probably not paying attention. And as is typical at the inauguration, there were some musical guests. Joe Biden had Lady Gaga, J-Lo, and Garth Brooks as his musical performances. So Andy, my opening question for you is who would be your inauguration musicians? Who would you invite?
So I really enjoyed this question because it got me thinking. First off, a very interesting mix for Joe Biden, who's in his 70s, but clearly on point with his musical taste. I myself would probably go, seeing as for my inauguration, it'd probably be as Prime Minister, being Australian. I would go for something Australian, maybe a Jimmy Barnes or something. And then the big guns of U2 and Coldplay, because I feel like they're very peaceful bands.
I like your logic. You put a lot of thought into that. I'm very impressed. I didn't think of picking an Australian band because if I was getting inaugurated, maybe I'd be getting done here. I just went with who I thought would be, what's the word, the right kind of vibe for me and the occasion, and probably most listeners won't have heard of these people. I'm into punk rock music, but you probably can't have a punk band at an inauguration. So I went with Greg Graffin, who's the lead singer of Bad Religion, because he also does like acoustic stuff, and also he's a scientist, that's his day job. And Frank Turner, who again is another punk band front man who now does his own solo music, and he got a lot of shit for playing at the Olympic opening ceremony in London. So I figured he loves those kinds of big gigs, so I'd have to pick him. They're also my favorite things to sing along to in the car. So
yes, yeah, very nice guy. Met him once when he played at the small ballroom in Newcastle.
Frank Turner
used to manage that place, so
I was most definitely at that show.
Oh, well, I probably would have seen you at some point.
I feel like that was before we knew each other. Newey, it's a small world. Don't be a jerk to anyone.
Yes, because it bites you in the ass when you want to get into good music concerts, and I'm the one that lets you in there.
I have so many questions for you later, but we'll take them off pod because probably no one else is interested, but that's exciting. Okay, let's talk about the less exciting stuff. Andy, our loss this Wednesday just gone puts us very solidly at the bottom of the ladder. We're on four losses in a row, and it is our worst start to a season in club history. But I do want to point out, because everything isn't negative, all our losses have been by just 1 point. So we haven't been getting thumped, but we haven't been getting any points either. Andy, are we sucky or are we just unlucky?
Yeah, I think one of the main things is, unfortunately, it's not looking very promising for Deansy to get the job full-time at this point, based on purely results from this season, which is unfortunate. But I think one thing we can kind of take a little bit of hope in is that we're once again creating the chances, but you don't win games by the number of chances created. It's the number of goals in the back of the net. So we need to, yeah, really work out what's going on, what our successful formation is, and if worst case scenario, let's sign Daniel McBreen because he's always good for a goal.
Wow, okay, you're going to dire measures. I think maybe, though, to put a positive spin on that, we're not in a situation where we don't know how to score goals and we also don't know how to get shots. So at least we're already that kind of one step there. We just need to get that polish and finish, right? And again, as I said last week or last pod, We have come up against some pretty good goalkeeping performances. So do you think the boys will still be in a position to kind of shake these four losses off and keep their heads up and move forward?
I hope so. But if not, we are going to have to start asking the other clubs to compensate us for the fact that we are making their goalkeepers go up in value very quickly when they play us.
Monetize this shit. Yes. Okay, I've sworn twice now. I need to stop that. None of them have been very terrible swears though, so let's all calm down. Before we get into actually recapping the game from Wednesday night, Andy, did you know that Friday night was our 400th A-League fixture for the Jets?
I did know that. I don't tend to listen to Brenton Speed, but I did pick up on that one little stat as they were walking out of the tunnels. Unfortunately, not the way that we would want to see 400 games, but here we are and we have a history and we should be proud of it.
Now, I do think that Brenton Speed knew this stat because someone on Twitter pinged him. So our very own stats man, our former Jetstream host, David Keating, he did a very long thread on Twitter. He's at Jetapool, if anyone would like to follow him for fun A-League facts. And, yeah, they tag Speedy in that to let him know the facts. Dave had a full list of A-League facts for the Jets as a celebration coming up to the 400th game. I'm going to read some of them out to you, not all of them, because Dave has a lot of stats. That's why we call him Statman. But after this 400th game, I've added the one loss from Dave's stats pre-game. Our win-draw-loss record is 133-92-175. So when I say Jets fans are used to losing, yes, we are. We lose more than we win overall. Disappointing, but an interesting stat that I noticed in the halftime score is we very rarely are ahead then lose. Only 8 games has that happened, and we're very rarely behind and then win at halftime. Again, only 8 games has that happened. So at least we are predictable and consistent. Another cool fact is from Liam Reddy through to Blake Archbold, who did his debut just the other week, we've had 185 players put on the shirt for the Newey Jets. The average number of appearances per player is 29, and Ben Kantorowski is the leader there at 196 games. Hopefully he gets some game time this season and doesn't succumb to injuries. Labby Halidi is our most common substitute, 45 times. We've had 24 different players wear the captain's armband. We've had players from 23 different countries representing our club. We've scored 493 goals altogether, but we've conceded 599. I'm dyslexic. These numbers are hard for me. We've only kept 90 clean sheets, which I think is a little bit disappointing and something that we clearly can't do this season. We've had 11 different managers. Carl Robinson is still our most successful win percentage, which is disappointing. We've only had 4 players play every minute of the season. Andy, do you know who any of those players in any of those seasons were?
So I believe we had Ante Kovic, Tarek Elrich. Sounds like something Topper Stanley would have done. Yeah, I'm sure there's someone else, but I can't think of it.
Jade North. And Ante Kovic, actually 2 seasons, he managed to play every minute of every season. Well done. And Topper Stanley's done it 3 times. So, yeah, Topper Stanley, what a stayer. 2017, 18, 18, 19, and 19-20, Topper Stanley.
He's surely got to be up there for performances. Like, I know Kantorowski has got a lot, but when you think Topper played every game for the past, 2 seasons or whatnot, surely he's got to be catching him.
Only 20-something games in a season, though, so Keanu has been playing since he was a little tacker and is a one-club man, so probably a long way to go to beat him, but Dave will let me know. Do you know who our fastest ever booking was?
I would want to say Griff, but I don't think that's the case. Let's see if I can guess this one. We might go with the bald guy, Ruben Zadkovic.
Dads is definitely our fastest booking, booked within the first minute of play. And our fastest ever dismissal, who I would have thought would be Zadkovic as well, Dave has taught me it was actually Jacob Pepper, who seems like such a nice bloke. 6 minutes after coming on as a substitute, got sent off. So that's a little taste of some stats over our last 400 games. Hopefully, you found some of those interesting, but Dave has a whole bunch more, and he always has fascinating stats to go up. So if you're on the Twitters, go and follow at Jettapool, and you can learn a lot more about this. He's got this exquisite spreadsheet where he records everything that happens to the Jets ever. It's got so many columns. It's got so many rows. It's very impressive. I'm a bit of a nerd. It gets me very excited, but it's got lots of information in it, and he's got all these sorts and formulas, and he can pull anything you want out of there. If you've wondered about the Jets, ask Jettapool. Thanks for listening, Dave, and thanks for your contribution. All right, I've delayed long enough, Andy. Let's talk about the actual game. So as I said, we lost 2-1 to Brisbane Roar at home after I was so cocky on the last pod. I was sure this game was our chance to get off the mark. In general, Andy, just general reflection, how did you view the game?
I was pretty disappointed that we went behind the way that we did, and then I think we just really struggled to get back into it. And, just another one of those games where in the final third things weren't seeming to go our way, and it was just another frustrating way to spend a Wednesday night. But I need to be more positive, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, it was frustrating in the moment, and I guess the disappointment makes it frustrating. But again, it was another game where I didn't think we played as badly as you would expect from the scoreline. So I'm going to read out some of these key stats here. Shots, we were well ahead on shots, 22-4. 6 shots on target for us, 2 for Brisbane. Possession, we had the slightly higher share, 55 to 45%. We had a higher number of passes at 462 versus 404. We had better passing accuracy, 81% versus 73%. We had the higher fouls as well, 16 to 11. We had 2 yellow cards to us, none to them. We were probably lucky we didn't get a red at some stage. No reds in this game. And we had 15 corners and just 1 for Brisbane. So those stats don't read like a losing team stats. So I'm going to ask you again, Andy, sucky or unlucky?
I would have to say the amount of shots on target being 6 surprised me. I actually thought it would have been less than that. So therefore, I think I will have to put it in the sucky category that we're, you know, having that many shots. So 22, but only 6 on target. Whereas if the Roar had 4, 2 on target, which you're assuming are the 2 that went in, just goes to show that I don't think we're really taking our shots in the wise way. I know there were a few that I think Connor O'Toole and definitely Gus Thurgate put at least 1 or 2 each over the bar and well onto the hockey field at some point. So, yeah, definitely need to be looking at that final third and what we do there.
Yeah, those boys were definitely taking shots like midfielders. Some of those were a little bit disappointing, but also, I can understand they get excited. I'm still going to go with unlucky. I think losing multiple games by just 1 is very unlucky, and I almost would feel better if we had have been thumped, because then that would justify the frustration and the pain that you're feeling. And getting these losses by 1 kind of keeps you stringing along for the hope, which is both a good thing and a bad thing as a fan. I also do need to apologise to Macklin Freak, the goalkeeper for Brisbane Roar, because A, I pronounced his name wrong in the last pod. I tried to Scandinavian it up and was calling him Freaker. And I also need to apologise for sassing him, because that kid had a blinder. I thought Jamie Young being out was our absolute chance to score some goals, but he did really well for a young bloke on debut. Do you agree, Andy? You've been a keeper. Did you think some of those were some good saves?
Yeah, as I alluded to earlier, I think if you're going to debut as a keeper this year, you want to wait and do it when you play the Jets. But yeah, he was, I definitely wouldn't, looking at his name on paper, wouldn't have thought that that would be how you pronounce it, but it's good to know these things. And also I wouldn't be against snapping him up if he ever wants to become a number one. If he can, I think Jamie Young's out for 6 to 8 weeks, if reports are correct. So if, you know, Young pushes him back down and he wants somewhere to go and we lose one of our keepers, I would take him for sure.
Yeah, I thought he was phenomenal. I thought he was really very impressive and very unlucky for us that he would play so well, of course, in his debut. But good on him. Like, you know, I'm sad that the Jets didn't get the win, but I'm a good sport and I'm a big enough fan of sport to say good on him. He had a blinder. And we did have a lot of shots, Andy. We 22 recorded in the stats. And it wasn't just one person with lots of shots. As you said, there was shots from Gus. There was shots from O'Toole, Yule, Roy. We were trying, right?
Yeah, and I think that's almost the problem is maybe we've gone back to that, can't remember what season it was, where we didn't have a goal for however many games or whatnot, and everyone was saying, like, we're almost trying too hard to score. It kind of has that vibe that we're trying to go for the, you know, Thunder Bastards or, you know, the highlight reel rather than just the getting it in the net. There's been a few times where you kind of scream at the TV or at the players saying, you know, cut the ball back, especially between Roy and Yule and even at times Nazarene. And they don't do it, or one of them goes themselves and completely butchers it. So hopefully that changes very soon. Otherwise, it's going to be another sad season for us.
So you think the pressure might be getting to them and they're making bad decisions in front of goal? So even though we're getting shots, we're not getting the right shots? Is that a good summation?
Yeah, I think especially with Roy and Valentino Yule, both of them have sort of been written as these guys are going to score so many goals and there's equal pressure on both of them. And Yule's got the monkey off his back a little bit, but Roy is the more, you know, he's been in the game longer and all that sort of stuff. You'd expect, you know, he's easily a 10-goal-a-season striker when he's on. So, yeah, I think he'd be feeling the pressure a lot more.
Right, you've brought up the monkey, so I'm going to go there. Roy is on his 49th A-League goal. So next goal Roy gets...
I didn't know what way you were going then.
Next goal Roy gets, I'm not going there. Next goal Roy gets will be his 50th. That's hard to say as a girl with a lisp. His number 50 goal. Do you think that's psyching him out a little bit, knowing that milestone's coming and maybe it is messing with his brain?
I would really hope not. He is a professional at the end of the day. And I would be like, he'd be aware of it now that everyone's sort of been highlighting it, but I wouldn't imagine that as a professional striker that you would sit there and necessarily keep a tally on your wall of how many you've scored. So hopefully he can get the magical goal that follows the 49th and get his 50th goal for the season in our next game.
I hate how easily you said that word. There has been people, though, on the social media, every home game we've had so far has said, you know, I'm off to see Roy score his 50, and they've been let down. So hopefully it does happen. I'm happy if it happens away, as long as it happens. While we're speaking of goal scoring, Valentino Yule did score in this last game, and we'll talk about the exact circumstances when we progress. But it's briefly put him in the lead of the Golden Boot ladder. So apparently we've had 29 goals scored in the A-League to the game that we're discussing. I think there has actually been one more game since then, but to the game we're discussing, 29 goals, and Yule is the only one to score two of them. Andy, is that incredible that we've had that many different goal scorers? And do you think Yule has any chance of staying in that race?
He's got every chance if he keeps scoring one goal a game. But I think the biggest thing is it just goes to show, I guess, the quality over the league and the goal scoring. Or I'm completely wrong and all the other teams are just only winning 1-0 or something like that. But yeah, to be spreading goals across more than just one player and you haven't got the usual, you know, McLaren or some other import well out ahead by this point by 10 goals because they've scored 6 in a game or something. So hopefully you can keep it. It would be a great story for the season if we come last, but our new striker also gets the golden boot.
That would be a strange situation to be in. I do hope Yule can keep scoring as well. And I cannot decide if I'm impressed or a little bit concerned that we haven't had any other multiple goal scorers up until this game. But that's the A-League for you, and we are living in coronavirus times, so, you know, the world is weird. Let's get into the specifics of the game then, Andy. So I'm going to read out the lineup for those who are interested, and I want to get your thoughts on if you would change anything for the next game and what you were particularly happy / not happy with. So it's an unchanged lineup, I think, from the previous match. Obviously, Duncan in goals. We've got three across the back, Katrumbas, Boogs and Topper Stanley. Yugarkovic, Hoffman, O'Toole, Rami Nazarene, Gus Thurgate, Roy O'Donovan and Valentino Yule up the front. So I'm pretty sure that is unchanged from the first game. And the subs were quite similar but at different times, except for we did get the double sub of the Petratoses that I've been after. Mirages came on for Hoffy a bit earlier than the previous week and Abbas came on for Thurgate earlier than the previous week. I got my wishes. I got both the Petratoses subbed together. I got Abbas on earlier. I got Mirages on for Hoffy earlier. And I think I ended up disappointed by all of them. Mirages did not have a blinder as he did the previous week. Abbas didn't bring that passion that I kept telling everyone he was going to bring, and the Petratos chemistry didn't seem to pay off. Other than me being very disappointed in Roy, as I said last week, I would say I am quite happy with that starting lineup still, and I still would like to keep giving them a chance. Andy, what do you think?
Yeah, the only one will be similar to what I said in the preview pod for this game. I don't see how many more games Jack Duncan has in him. The first goal in this game, yes, sure, was a deflection, but I think he probably could have done more for that. It wasn't a very forceful deflection. You just really get the vibe that there's not even an effort. Like, he sort of just watched it go over his head and didn't even sort of jump or anything for that one. So that was a bit disappointing.
Okay, but tell me as a keeper yourself, how hard is that when you cop the deflection like that? Like, should the keeper have been able to read that kind of deflection, or is it just, well, deflection happened and he had no time to change his line and so he went flat-footed and the stance was just a reaction? I mean, I've never been a keeper, so I don't know.
Yes, and I will say I was a keeper when I played about 10 years ago. But I, from a ricochet like that, there's probably not a whole lot you could really do, but I think it sends a huge message when you're not seen to be putting an effort to do something.
Like, you'd still want the stretch, even if the stretch was off the mark.
Yeah, even if, and you don't want keepers diving for, you know, theatrics and all that sort of stuff. But when you're standing there flat-footed and watching it sail over your head, knowing that it's dipping, he's fairly tall, his arms are fairly long, he could stick his right arm up in the air and it'd probably graze his fingers, but at least you'd say, oh, he got there, he just didn't get a strong hand behind it or something. When I don't feel that we lose a whole lot on current form with Jack Duncan, if we bring Italiano in, they both have strengths and weaknesses to their games. I would be very interested to see what it is at, because all I can imagine is it's a training situation where he's just having an absolute blinder at training and keeps his spot that way, because it doesn't seem like he's really at threat.
What about the psychology of it, Andy? If you rest a keeper based on losses of a margin of one, do you risk psyching him out completely and not getting a better outcome with the other keeper?
Yeah, absolutely, because it comes back to what I'd said again, I think, on the preview pod that, you know, at the end of the day, the ball has to come through all of the other players to get to the position where Jack Duncan needs to do something. And their first goal from Densaki, is that it? Yeah. Anyway, from their Japanese player, was that, you know, no one was really putting pressure on him. He had plenty of time to stop, look up, work out how he was going to take it. And it was only when Topper started to run towards him and then stick his foot out to stop it that it was a lucky, you know, deflection. Topper probably could have done more to shut him down quicker. And I think it was Katrumbis that did pretty well to stay on his man. Sorry, it might have been O'Toole. And he could have, you know, he probably did the right thing by staying by his man, but at the same time could have maybe looked to move up and set a bit of an offside trap. But, yeah, they're all things that I don't feel like we've got a whole, you know, holistic team approach at the moment. There's still individuals trying to work out their game and where they fit within the team. And I guess that comes from somewhat interrupted pre-seasons.
Right. Sorry, if anyone heard the screeching in the background, that's my cats, Leia and Audrey. They are not friends. So hopefully that didn't come through too loud and hopefully they settle down. Okay, Andy, you've told me what you didn't like about the lineup, mostly being Duncan and defence. What did you like about the lineup? Who got your attention? What's your positive takeaway from this game?
So even though he kind of contributed a little bit to the second goal that Brisbane scored, I really liked Johnny Katrumbis in this game. I felt that there were a lot of runs that he made where he probably could have afforded to be a bit more selfish and run the ball a bit further, thinking of one occasion where he laid it off and I don't know if it was Roy or someone else sort of put it wide, where Johnny probably could have had the shot himself. But yeah, apart from that, there wasn't really anyone that stood out. Nazarene did his usual wizardry, and it was great for Yule to get on the score sheet again, as we've said.
Yeah, I think I've already said my disappointment is probably that the subs were exactly what I wanted and they really didn't bring what we needed at that point of the game. So that's probably why I'm not a football coach, because I was wrong. But hopefully we get better from that in the future. I will again say I'm still quite happy with what we're doing in the front, except for the lack of execution, the lack of that final finish. And I'm still not sure that Roy is maximizing on Rami Nazarene's brilliance. I think he did a good job to keep up in that match. And, you know, he was clearly had ice on his ankles at the end of the match, so he might have been a bit uncomfortable for some of that match, but still, I think, bought the tempo. I'm going to flip, Andy, and I'm going to ask you about the Brisbane players, because we were very silly last week when we were previewing this game. I did not even think of the fact that because Champness is on loan, he wouldn't have been allowed to play against us. I assume that's why he didn't play. So dumb that I didn't think of that. But we were talking about players like O'Shea being a problem. I don't think we even thought about Wenzel Halls being the problem that he was. Did that surprise you that he was so instrumental in this match?
It surprised me because I didn't really think so either, but Matt definitely said that O'Shea was a quality player. Maybe not in those words, but he was a player of good ability. So Matt seemed to see it, but you and I both missed it.
Because we were more concerned with Scott McDonald.
Yeah, and what Joey would do. But on the Joey Champness factor, I shot a sneaky text to Laurie this afternoon and asked him if that was part of the deal or what. And to his credit, thanks, Laurie, he responded pretty quickly and said that it's actually part of an FFA rule to not play against the team that you are loaned to.
Which makes total sense, and I can't believe I didn't think of it when we were discussing it.
Yeah, so it wasn't something that we put in place. But then again, not sure if it would have made a difference if he did play, because I haven't seen too much of him. But I kind of like that rule that, you know, they're saying we can now have a loan system in the A-League, but that player can't play. Obviously, it will suck when if the same goes and Nazarene can't play against Melbourne City. But, yeah.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, because Nazarene is on loan, isn't he? He's not properly signed for us. Oh, that's going to be disappointing when that day comes.
Yeah, so, Laurie, if you can confirm if that is, you know, for everyone, which being an FFA rule, I imagine it would be. But if it's allowing us to have a loan system where we can get players like Nazarene for pretty much just paying his wages, then I'm all for it.
I'm still embarrassed that I didn't know that this was a thing. Like, how many other rules are there that I don't know about? I thought I knew what was going on in this game, in this league, and I didn't know that. I should probably hand in my podcast host hat. I can't even say podcast. Should definitely hand it in.
Yeah, I only knew about this from, I believe, because I'm a Manchester United fan who are currently top of the league, and they had a deal with one of their players once where it was, you know, they couldn't play against them and it really impacted the team. I can't remember what team it was that they played against, but they had two or three players on loan to them and they couldn't use them.
So yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. I'm going to blame the coronavirus and the fatigue and everything else, but yeah, that makes perfect sense.
But maybe then the rule should go to you can't play against a team that you used to have, so therefore we can never play against the Wanderers and we just automatically get the 3 points.
Yeah, if only that rule applied to Carl Robinson as well and he had to be benched against us, that would be brilliant. Okay, so we already talked about the first goal, and again, to embarrass myself, I'm also going to say Dan Zaki, but I'm the only one of my sisters who doesn't speak great Japanese, so I'm probably pronouncing it wrong. We've already talked about that goal, unfortunate deflection, probably not much he could do. Much more exciting was when we scored. So that first goal against us happened in the sixth minute. And then in the 38th minute, we did come back, which we have done this season, and it was very exciting. Yule putting it in from a Nazarene corner. Nazarene had a lot of corners. As an aside, how good is Rami on corners? Very impressive. He almost scored direct off a corner just a few minutes later. That combination, Yule and Nazarene, that's probably where we're going to find goals, right? From set pieces and going to Yule or maybe another Boogs header. Do you think that's our best route to goal in future games?
Yeah, I actually had a look at the replay today and I thought I was a bit unsure and still am on whether it went off Yule's head or actually hit kind of like the side of his neck and top of his shoulder area. Either way, it went in the net, so I don't really care. But, yeah, totally agree. Rami on corners, they're just absolutely on point and he pretty much puts it right where he needs to. A few of Hoffie's corners have been a bit interesting. They've seemed to go quite deep. But we, as we saw, I think when we had Dimi Petratos, we cannot rely on just one player for set pieces, even if they are incredible, because if that player's not on the field or is just having an off day, you know, you put all your eggs in one basket, you're kind of screwed.
And it gets too predictable, right? Dimi, you know, other teams got very, very savvy on how to shut Dimi down, not just in the set pieces, but in general play. So you do need to have that kind of diversity in who can take those set pieces. Otherwise, you've got to start doing crazy things like short balls and things like that to shake it up, right?
And I think they even made mention in the commentary for this game or the last game a similar thing with when Dimi would always take a free kick, you always knew he was going for goal. So there was never any, oh, let's build a wall, but let's be careful in case he knocks it off to a running player on the side. Like, it was always Dimi was going for glory, which when it went in, he can have all the glory he wants. But when it went wide or over the bar, it was like, oh, there was probably another option.
Yeah. Okay, so we did go to the Sheds at halftime, one all tied. We still had some hope at that stage, I think, and the text chain between me and my football-watching girlfriends was that we would have been happy to take away the draw, but we did think we needed to push in the second half. Did you think we came out better in the second half, or do you think that we let that game get away with us?
I think we really needed the goal that we got a little bit closer to sort of the 30 minutes rather than closer to the 40. If we, you know, I really felt that we were good for a goal if we didn't have the break. When we came out from the break, we, from memory, didn't seem to start as well as we perhaps should have with momentum going our way. So that'd be, yeah, the main thing that I look at. And then, is it 61st minute, Wenzel Hall's bottom corner, ball through from McDonald. So, yeah, that was the next goal.
Yeah, so that was probably where I personally felt most disappointed with Duncan. I felt he was a little bit flat-footed there, and that one probably was a bit more obvious than the deflection.
I'm going to put that one down to Johnny Kay, actually. I feel he, in that instance, whilst I said he was great going down the other end, he seemed to be a bit flat-footed, and McDonald kind of got to make the run, and then Wenzel Hall's even again. And from memory, Boogs was right on Wenzel Hall's, but being on a yellow and being in the box, it wouldn't have taken much for Wenzel Hall's to go down under the slightest of contact. So, yeah, I don't think he could have risked that, and Wenzel Hall's just put a good shot. And that one, whilst Duncan was a bit flat-footed on it, he did actually make an effort for that one, I feel.
Did while we're on Wenzel Hall's, did you notice the little fisticuffs he was having with Valentino Yule?
Yeah, I don't know where that started from, but it was pretty funny when Yule just pretty much tapped him on the chin and ran off.
it was kind of like a little kid, hey?
Yeah, he seems to be Yule seems to be getting that protagonist type role, which is probably good, because I don't think he's going to, you know, straight up headbutt someone like Roy did when he was at the Mariners. So, it's good to see things like that.
Well, look, if we're not going to win a game, we need some kind of entertainment, I guess.
Yes.
Okay, so some other talking points about that match, other than the fact that we lost and we're disappointed. It was a midweek game, quick turnaround coming from the weekend match, which did get 4,500 people at it, which was, I think, a good turnout for these COVID days. A few less at this match. I don't have the exact number, but definitely looked like less. But well done to everyone who made the effort to get out on a Wednesday night, a school night. Beautiful evening for football, being able to sit in the warm but not cool air. So well done to everyone who got themselves there. Before we move on to previewing the next match, Andy, did you have a man of the match for me?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Valentino Yule, and we'll give my usual honourable mention to Rami for the service that made the goal possible.
Yeah, I'm going to go the same, but I'm going to add the comment of, I'm pretty sure in his post-match interview, Rami used the phrase, I've got sore ankles from some shit tackles out there. And that just nudged him above for me. I was very impressed with that frankness. If that's not what he said, don't tell me. Don't ruin it for me. I enjoyed it. Now I've sworn three times. We're probably not going to come up in any pod indexing, because now we're going to have explicit tags and stuff. Okay. Our chance to not make it five losses on the trot this weekend. Sunday evening, 6:05, we are away to Wellington Phoenix in their temporary COVID home of Wollongong, which does have quite similar weather to Wellington at times. Wellington have played two games so far this season. They've had a draw with MacArthur and a loss to Sydney. And like Brisbane, they've had kind of a long rest between games. They haven't played since the 9th of January. So by the time this game rolls around, that's a two-week break between games. Do you think that's going to help us at all, Andy, having that break? I thought it might have helped with Brisbane, but it certainly didn't.
No, I think that Wellington have obviously been, you know, displaced a little bit, but at the same time they've spent more time together as a squad. Not sure how much training they got to do when they first sort of arrived here from New Zealand, but I don't think from memory they've had the greatest of starts to the season. Going down to Sydney, as you said, and then MacArthur getting the draw. So it looks like something we could get something out of. But in saying that, they do have players that can turn it on if they want to turn it on.
It'd be peak us. I have a lot of time for Wellington as a team, and I have a lot of time for Wellington supporters. It would be peak us to disappoint me, and we finally turn it on against a team I have affections for.
That or Denton scores against us.
I will point out, though, that the draw to MacArthur, they were a man down. They did get a red card in that match. So that kind of makes it look like they could have done better to hold to that draw, playing a large chunk of the match a man down. And it also means they will be without a man when they play us. So Alex Rufer got a red card for violent conduct. And it was a pretty hard to stomach kind of red. It was a poor tackle that took him down, but while he was on the ground, the player got tripped. And I guess in real time, it looked like he lashed out and kicked up and tripped him over. I watched it a few times over and I don't really think it looked that bad. But I'm glad that they're going to be without a starting player when they play against us. So, Andy, before we get into who we need to watch out for in the Wellington team, you've already said that you're probably ready to give Duncan a rest and give Italiano a run. Is there anything else you'd change in our starting lineup?
The only other thing I would change is Rami's ankles. If, you know, he's getting a bit of pain in that, it's probably not worth, you know, he's done more than enough to warrant a bit of time off. As much as you want to play him while he's in form, I wouldn't be upset if they decided to put him on the bench and maybe start a Costa or someone like that and bring Rami on when he can, you know, everyone's gassed at 60 minutes and he can just run and duck in and out. But apart from that, I don't think Maki Petrados is one that's very interesting. We keep hearing so much about him and then he comes on. I don't know whether it's he's coming on with not enough time to get into the game, which is then causing, you know, he's not having that sort of 20 minutes to run around and get used to how everything's going and then get going. But, yeah, I'd like to see Roy score, and if we can do that, then that's all we really need at this point.
Do you think Roy will keep starting if he can't score this match?
I think so. Looking at the bench, I don't see – it's not as if you have someone that's guaranteed to score that can come on for him. I think Roy keeps his spot. The only way I could see him being pushed out would be some form of formation change, and I don't see that happening whilst we're still under this interim coach title.
That does make things difficult. That said, I don't envy Deans having inherited
the squad that Carl Robinson built
and destroyed. Thanks, Carl Robinson. Deansy's stepped up as interim a couple of times now. And obviously, whenever you're in a situation where you're an interim it's a difficult situation. So I guess I want to be clear that I hang none of this on Deans. I think, you know, he's been admirable stepping up. He has made it clear that he is the interim and he wants to go back to his regular role, and that's cool. But I think he's working with what he's got. And I noticed in the post-match press conference, he was quite realistic and upfront with the journalists in the questions, and has the assessment that, you know, if we were in a position where you absolutely did not know where goals were going to come from, you would be a lot more disappointed than you are. So he's seeing the shots as a good thing that we just need to, you know, finally finish. But he did point out our lack of ability to keep a clean sheet, which I think obviously is a good step towards hopefully finally winning a game. But again, I'll take a point. I'll take away a draw. It would just be nice to have something. And I think we saw that with the girls last week, getting their draw against Brisbane. You need something to sink your teeth into and get that boogeyman out of the back of your brain with those continuous losses. So in terms of Wellington lineup, Andy, who are the key matchups? Who do we have to look out for? Who's going to be the troublemaker? Where are their goals coming from, and how are we going to stop them?
So I have mainly last season, but definitely this season still a threat is Cameron Devlin. He seems to do pretty well. I think it's David Ball scored in their last game. So if he's on point, he should be able to score a few. They look like they've recruited from, you know, some more known teams such as Charlton Athletic and Fortuna Dusseldorf and Rydenton from Brisbane Roar. So yeah, made some pretty big signings. So hopefully they you know, won't find their feet under us, and yeah, maybe this could be our best chance to look. We need a win. I don't think it's worth talking about getting a draw and having confidence come from a draw. I'm sure that can happen, but I think at this stage we just need a win more than anything, and a convincing win. So I hope we can score a few.
Golly gosh, I've got fears now that Matty Rydenton's going to come on as a sub and score against us, and that's going to be ridiculously embarrassing. I do hope that does not happen. Yeah, no, I don't want to think about that. They lost a few players as well. In the off season, they've had a few changeovers. So it's quite a different team we've got from Wellington Phoenix this year. And I think when we were talking about them in the preview pod, they're an almost anything could happen team. And it's a little bit difficult to judge, I guess, with that draw and that loss, with them having played just two games. Judging the latter this season is a science in itself. You need a formula to figure out the differences in the game. So I think it's a bit of a mixed bag for me when it comes to what to expect from the Phoenix. But I also think that the separation and them being stuck in Australia without being able to travel internationally could be a blessing in disguise for them, because, you know, what else are you going to do when you're away from home than focus? And they don't have Wellington are always at a disadvantage with the travel, and they don't have that this year. So I actually think it could end up being a blessing in disguise for them, or you might end up being disappointed again.
Yeah, and as you said, they've had some pretty big outs with Liberace, Kekache, Gary Hooper was good for them last year from memory. Stephen Taylor just absolutely solidified their defence line with Devere. So, yeah, that's some interesting gaps that they would have to fill, and I'm not sure Rydenton fills those, but he's there anyway. So good on him.
Sorry for being so sassy about your Rydenton. You know, who are we to sass right now? But, you know. Okay, so give me a tip for the game, Andy. What's going to happen?
My last tip for the last game didn't come true at all, so I'm going to go for a 2-1 victory to us. I will keep the faith for one more game.
So you're remaining optimistic, even after all of the disappointment and everything we've just said? You're remaining optimistic for the win. Is this your football analyst tip or your Jets fan hope?
No, this is my based on hard data that I will provide at some point in the future.
All right. I'm going to tip a 1-1 draw. I don't think we have a clean sheet in us yet. I'm hoping you all can score again, but I think we'll get at least one. I'm not optimistic enough to tip for a win, but I'm hoping we can salvage a point from this. We've got a few more games coming up this weekend, Andy. Again, the draw is just completely out of sorts, so I'm just going to tip what's going to happen up until we speak again. On Saturday, Arvo, Western United take on Perth. Who are you tipping there?
I am going to say that I thought Perth would absolutely fall apart with the late start to the season for them, but they did really well against Adelaide, who are meant to be in well and truly in the finals race. So I'm going to say Perth. We're going to go 4-1. They're going to smash it.
Yeah, those sneaky Perthians, Perthites. What do you call a person from Perth?
I don't even know.
Those sneaky people from Perth, they'd been using that late start to the season to prepare, clearly. I also didn't expect them to do well against Adelaide and was shocked. So, yeah, I'm also going to tip Perth. I'm going to go 3-1.
And see, I think the only thing that stopped Perth from, I thought they would have done the same thing that Wellington have done and moved to Sydney or something like that, but I would say the only reason they didn't was because I think Tony Sage is pretty jack of spending money on them as well, so I don't know if he would have paid for hotels and stuff for, you know, 6 weeks.
And also they probably want the opportunity at some stage to get teams over to play them, so
yeah.
I think they want to leave that door open. Yeah, but we'll see what happens and whether or not all of that, none of the fixtures are set in stone very far in advance these days because that's COVID life. Okay, speaking of fixtures, Adelaide host Melbourne Victory on Saturday night, so the slightly later game after the Saturday Arvo one. Who are you tipping there?
I will go a 1-1 draw.
A 1-1 draw. Okay, I'm going with Adelaide to win. So Melbourne Victory have only played the one game so far this year and they lost. And so, again, disrupted start to the season. So Adelaide have got the win and the draw as well as their loss and a little bit more momentum, I think. So I am going to tip Adelaide. I'm going to go 1-2 over Victory. Then the next game, this is how messed up the draw is. We've had Western United versus Perth on Saturday, Adelaide versus Victory on Saturday. Then on Tuesday, the matchup will be Victory and Perth. So that will be a big question mark with the two fewest games under the belt. What do you think is going to happen there, Andy?
I will say that I think Perth will come away with another big win, something around a 5-1 win to Perth.
And we need that, right? Because Victory are, you know, down the bottom end of the table with us. So we probably want Victory to continue not to perform so that we have some hope of actually getting above someone at some stage.
Yeah, and I think Grant Brebner or whatever his name is you know, hot favourite for the first person to be sacked this year.
That's what I said.
So the more they lose, the more likely that is to happen.
Yes. Right. I definitely had something else I wanted to say and now I can't remember what it was, but that's okay. Oh, yes, I remember what it was. In some good news, the Central Coast Mariners aren't the top of the table anymore. Can we at least be rejoiceful for that?
We certainly can. We can always rejoice these things, although the people that are top of the table, actually, I believe Matt is very upset about who is currently top, so we may not even mention it.
Oh, so we're not saying it like a Voldemort style thing. Oh, no, I said, you know what I mean. Yeah. So we're still disappointed with the top of the table regardless, but at least it isn't the Mariners right now. I will take some solace in that. In other good news, it's finally official that Matt Miller is coming home to the Newcastle Jets. He should be, I guess, back by now with the announcement just recently that he was getting on a plane and heading to Perth, and he'd be doing his quarantine and then he would be back. That's not been, I don't know whether it's not been handled well or just no one wanted to get ahead of the news. And we saw that from lots of unconfirmed sources before we saw it from the club. So I guess I'm very glad it finally happened. But it's kind of like VAR, where I'm a little bit disappointed that I didn't get to have this big celebration moment thinking that it was true, because I didn't want to believe it in case it was nonsense. Do you think they could have maybe managed our expectations a little bit better on that one?
I think on this one, the biggest thing was I don't think it was by any means his first choice to come back. I think he really wanted to probably stay there and progress his career, but it sounds like he didn't do enough to meet the valuation that Newcastle were asking for. And now he's on his way home. But once, word did start getting out from different Twitter spheres, I thought the club would have come out and said something, but then again, maybe they wanted to make sure they actually had a he will be back for sure, because it was pretty up in the air from what I've heard.
Yeah, well, crikey, I wouldn't want to be in the UK right now. Not for all the money in football. I would much rather be here.
Well,
How do you.
apparently he did get the Rona, they said.
Yeah.
So hopefully he gets that out, because apparently Europe had one of, oh yeah, Europe has one of the highest, like, re-getting it, fancy words, doctor.
Reinfection?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, so they've got the highest rates of reinfection from COVID, or readmission to hospital from it. So hopefully he doesn't have it where it comes back again. That would suck.
And how do you think he's going to go after doing the 2 weeks quarantine? We've seen all the tennis players sooking about their quarantine situations, and you can at least hit a tennis ball against a wall in a hotel room, as we've seen them doing. You probably can't practice running on goal or tackles too easily. How do you think he's going to go coming out, and do you think we can use him effectively in any reasonable period of time to make it matter?
I, from what I remember hearing, I don't know if it was Shane Matisse or someone else that said that he was actually on a program before he come back, and he's got some form of workout program whilst he's in quarantine, and he's a fairly naturally fit guy from memory. Like, he just runs all day, so I don't think he's going to have any problems with being match ready. One thing I am excited for, though, is with him not being here, we actually have some depth in the left back and right back positions. So maybe we will get to see him further forward.
Okay, so I guess we should also mention, don't forget the women are playing on Saturday down at Number 2 Sports Ground, a rematch against the Western Sydney Wanderers. So get down and support the women. And I guess all that remains to be said is don't forget you can find us on the socials, as well as following Jetapool on the Twitter for the statistics. Do follow at Jetstream Newey on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook to chat with us about the football. Andy, thank you so much for being here with me this evening to chat about another disappointing game.
No worries at all, Emma. And yeah, if anyone ever wants to join us on this lovely podcast, then please get in touch via the socials, because we definitely need some more people that are keen to discuss football with us, football people.
And you know what? You don't even need to know all the rules. I didn't know about the lone player thing. You don't need to be able to pronounce words. I couldn't say podcast or 50th earlier. So the standards are not that high. You really just need to to be able to string most of a sentence together and be passionate about the game. And we would love some people to bring some positivity because these are dark times. Worst ever start to a season is not a great spot to be in. Okay, so I guess despite all the turmoil, I will just say go the Jets.
Go the Jets. Oh, I'm down, Benjamin!